So we're looking at the larger Pure Land Sutra. And all I'd said really was that it was written down about 500 years after Buddha Shakyamuni died. And what was I just saying? I don't know. I just wanted to give it some historical context really and
different
say that there's about a dozen different versions of it in Chinese and Sanskrit that have been discovered, some more or less complete than others. Some of the Chinese ones have got quite a long section in that is quite stylistically different and appears to be, and was probably written by a Buddhist teacher giving a commentary on the sutra, and his commentary then got included in later versions of the whole thing. And when we come to the vows, you'll see that there's a different, a subtle but crucial difference between the Sanskrit and the Chinese versions. In the Buddhist tradition, though, we don't, we sort of try and have an awareness that the words may or may not be historically what the Buddha said, but that the spirit of the Dharma is the most important thing. So these words, we don't know what percentage of them were spoken by the Buddha, but we do know that the spirit of them, because this is what there's a lineage of teachers and experienced practitioners who say that the words in here are in the spirit of the Dharma and are in the spirit of what the Buddha said. So this is the larger Pure Land Sutra, and it begins, as all sutras and suttas do in English, with these four words: thus have I heard. And the I in this sentence is Ananda, the Buddha's assistant and disciple. And the reason all sutras begin like this is because when the Buddha died, they sort of, all of his disciples didn't know all of the teachings, and they hadn't written any of them down because writing hadn't really been invented, or if it had, it wasn't very widespread. And they said, well, is there anybody who knows the Buddha's teachings off by heart? And someone said, well, Ananda assisted the Buddha all his life, and he's got a very good memory. So they called him in. The tradition has it that when the Buddha died, Ananda wasn't yet enlightened, so he wasn't allowed into the council of elders that were discussing how to organise themselves after the Buddha's death. But when they realised that they didn't really know what any of the teachings were, or all of the teachings, I should say, they brought in Ananda and said, come on, we've heard about your memory. Can you recite the Buddha's teachings? So he stood in the middle of all these Buddhists and said, thus have I heard. And then recited all of the teachings. I was reading about the Lotus Sutra the other day, which I'll mention again in a minute, but Sangharakshita, who's created the Trinaratna organisation, said he found it hard to believe that Ananda could have remembered all of these sutras, or even a percentage of them. But he met somebody in London who'd got the kind of memory where they could reel off passages of books that they'd read. And he said, after that point, I believed that maybe it was possible. And I have met people with that kind of memory. So maybe it was possible. And certainly lots of them are written in verse, which is much easier to memorise. So Ananda is the person who is conveying this to us, and he's telling us a story. But the word is I, so there's a sort of significance in that each of us is hearing this sutra, and it's written in the past tense, and the implication is, thus have I heard, that it isn't the first time that we've come into contact with the Dharma in our sort of in our life, or in the sort of history of our many lifetimes, if you like. We are hearing the Dharma now, and we've already heard it, which sort of resonates with people's spiritual experiences of coming and feeling at home in Buddhist communities and feeling like they've been here before. So that's something of the attitude that you can have when listening to the text. Anyway, the first two lines are, thus have I heard. At one time the Blessed One was staying at the Vulture Peak at Rajagriha. Rajagriha was famous for two reasons. One, because there were hot springs there, and two, because it was very high. And you could see a long way, and there was a sort of sense of being close to heaven. If you think of sacred places, it was a sacred place. You were close to the gods, but you could see all of this land, and there was quite a big city that you could see. So this position of being somewhere in between the heavenly realms and the bustling human realms underneath, this kind of in-between position that the Buddha inhabits. And you'll see that theme going throughout this whole text of relating between these different worlds. And it's also famous for the hot springs. And even knowing all the things I said before about this being delivered 500, being written down 500 years after the Buddha had died, and us not knowing if he'd even said these words at all, tradition has it that he was getting towards the end of his life when he recited, when he gave this teaching, or when these events took place, and that he'd possibly gone to the springs for health reasons, as well as it being a holy place. He could take the hot waters and relieve any arthritic tendencies that he had. So I mentioned the Lotus Sutra earlier, and I'm going to mention it again because tradition also has it that this teaching was given in the midst of a sort of long teaching season in which the Buddha delivered the many chapters of the Lotus Sutra, which also begin with this line: at one time the Blessed One was staying at Vulture Peak at Rajgriha. So this is the same time as the Lotus Sutra, and in a break from giving that series of teachings, which is full of stories and poetic languages and allegories, the events in this sutra happens, which prompts the Buddha to talk about a leader. So I'm going to read the first page. Thus have I heard. At one time the Blessed One was staying at the Vulture Peak at Rajagriha. At that time the Buddha was attended by 12,000 monks, all of them arahats. So they'd all managed to get rid of greed and hate and delusion. Among them were the Buddha's first five disciples, the first arahats, Ajnata, Kundinya, Ashvajit, Bhaspa, Mahamana and Bhajrajit, the first lay disciples who had all subsequently ordained, Yashas and his four friends, Vimala, Subahu, Purna son of Maitrayani, and Gavampati, the three Kashyapa brothers, Uravila Kashyapa, Gaya Kashyapa and Nadi Kashyapa, together with Kashyapa the younger and Kashyapa the great, the two friends Moggallana and Shariputra, the disciples Kapina, Chunda, Aniruddha, Nandika, Kimpila, Subhuti, Ravata, Kadaravanaka, Vakala, Svagata, Amogaraja, Pariyanika, Panta the younger, the Buddha's half-brother Nanda, his son Rahula, and his cousin and closest disciple Ananda. The Buddha was also attended by a great many Bodhisattva Mahasattvas with Maitreya at their head. So I'll pause for a moment there. First of all, one thing that's happening is all the important people in the Sangha are getting name-checked, which is politically a good thing. And these are all characters that appear throughout all the other stories. But it also mentions the Bodhisattva Mahasattvas, and there's some suggestion from Buddhist scholars that's supported by the text that these would have been lay people, or that the Bodhisattva tradition partly comes from lay people who supported the Buddha when he came to visit their towns. They would have given him a place to live, they would have asked for teachings, they would have spread the Dharma as much as they could do whilst maintaining a lay life. So partly it comes out of that tradition. But also, of course, in the Mahayana texts, which this is one of, the Bodhisattva tradition is really emphasised and upheld as the ideal. So instead of going for nirvana yourself and becoming an arahat, defeating all the passions, and then when you die, going to Parinirvana. What's emphasized here is spreading the Dharma, is making a vow to help all beings so that you're continually reborn as long as it takes for everybody in the world to get enlightened. And that's a theme that runs through many of the Mahayana sutras. And in some of the texts, Caroline, we hear that the bodhisattvas would wear white. And for the benefit of the tape, Caroline is wearing white this evening. So I did want to get to the end of this page. So the Reverend Ananda rose from his seat, uncovered his right shoulder, approached the Buddha and knelt with his right knee touching the ground. He joined his palms in Anjali and said, "The Blessed One's sense powers appear serene. The colour of his skin is pure. His countenance is cleansed, radiating with a golden glow. As the jujube fruit turns bright yellow in autumn, pure, cleansed, radiating a golden colour. Or as a skillfully made ornament of Jambu River gold displayed on a white cloth shows its purity, so the Blessed One appears radiant today. O Blessed One, I do not ever recall seeing the Tathagata so serene, purified, cleansed, and radiant as I do today. This thought occurs to me. Today, the Tathagata dwells in the sphere of most rare Dharma, the sphere of the Buddhas. Today, the one who is the eye of the world is centered upon what must be done by a guide of the world. Dharma. Today, the one who is preeminent in the world dwells in supreme Bodhi. Today, the honored of the gods possess all the virtues of a Tathagata. The Buddhas of the three times contemplate one another. Could it be that you are now bringing to mind all the other Buddhas? Are you gazing upon the Tathagatas, Arahats, Samyak, some Buddhas of the past, the future, and the present? Is that why your august presence shines with such a radiance today?" Then the Blessed One said to Ananda, "You are right, Ananda, you are right. But did the Devas reveal this to you, or did you discern it for yourself with knowledge arising from your own reflection?" Ananda said, "It was not by the Devas, O Blessed One. It occurred to me through knowledge arising from my own reflection." The Blessed One said, well said, Ananda. The way you express yourself is indeed noble. Your reflection is propitious. Your inspired speech auspicious, and you have inspired thus, Ananda, for the sake of many people. It is for the happiness of many, out of compassion for the world, for the sake of the great multitude of humans, for the good, the happiness of devas and humans, that you have asked the Tathagata about this matter." Ananda, although a Tathagata shares his knowledge and vision with innumerable other Tathagata, Arahats, Samyaks and Buddhas, it is no wise diminished thereby. Why so? Because it issues from a cause inexhaustible. Thus the Tathagata's compassion never runs dry. The Tathagata takes pity on the threefold world with a great inexhaustible compassion. The Tathagata appears in the world in order to reveal the teaching of the way everywhere, so the multitude of living beings all reap the benefit of the true Dharma. Even in a myriad kalpas, it is difficult to encounter and see the Tathagata. It is like the Udumbara tree that blooms only after a long interval of time. But now that you have asked this question, numerous blessings will be bestowed on all living beings, celestial and human. They will be guided and transformed. Furthermore, noble Ananda, only the power of a Tathagata could move you to question the Tathagata in this way, thus benefiting Bodhisattva, Mahasattvas, such questions make manifest who can be teachers of all the world. So now, Ananda, listen carefully, pay attention, and I shall explain." I'm going to stop there. There's so much already in the first. So the two, three things that I want to quickly pick up on. Tathagata is a Sanskrit word that can be translated as either Tathagata or Tathagata, and depending on which way you take it, it either means the one who thus come one, the one who comes to us, or this gone one, the one who has gone from us. And it's also used, some Buddhist teachers will translate it simply as suchness or reality, and there's a sense of in the Lotus Sutra, which this was delivered at the same time as the first teaching, really is about the eternity, the eternal nature of the Dharma, and how the Buddha somehow came from something eternal. Although he has a human form, he's in touch with something eternal. And in that it describes that he has disciples from the past. And somebody says, how can that be possible? And he said, well, it's because actually I've always been enlightened and I'm always being enlightened. And when he says that, he doesn't mean Siddhartha Gautama. He's not talking about the sort of humanness of him has always been enlightened. He's speaking from a place of enlightenment, sort of tapping into eternity. And Tathagata really is an epithet for that, a Buddha that's tapping into eternity. And in terms of thus gone or thus come, we often think of Amida being the one who is coming to us, and Shakyamuni Buddha, the historical Buddha, being the one who's gone from us because physically he's not present anymore. But there is something eternal that they're both connected to, which is also part of the nature of reality. So Ananda has been moved by this enlightenedness, if you like, to ask this question of the Buddha, and the Buddha is going to answer from this place of enlightenment. And the other thing that I wanted to pick up on is this sort of theme, that other theme that goes through the text, is one of relationship. So the Buddha is sitting, looking radiant, glowing. He hasn't just got a suntan. He is, you know, he's sort of shining with love. And Ananda is inspired by seeing him. And this is a moment of transmission of the Dharma. Ananda is inspired to ask a dharmic question, which, you know, the Buddha praises and says is a very good question, but he notices the Buddha's enlightenment in that moment, and he's inspired by it. And then the Buddha will then go on to tell a story in which this happens again. So we get the setting of the scene. The Buddha's on this big mountain, surrounded by all of these important disciples, all of these lay people, all of these people who have put off their own enlightenment for the sake of other beings. He's sitting there, meditating maybe, or maybe just chatting with somebody, looking serene, and Ananda says to him, goodness me, there's something going on with you today. Are you in touch with all the other Buddhas in the universe? And what he means is, are you sort of in an enlightened frame of mind? Are you in touch with what is eternal today? And the Buddha says, well, since you asked, yes, I am. And then he says, let me tell you a story. So I'll pause the tape. Then we'll pick up on the story that he tells next time.